Now we're on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, but we let me just take this out of your way here. But we're really holding on Daf Beis Amud Beis. We're going to do Bat Metzia again. It's the third time I'm making the announcement, and then we'll switch to Chulin. Yeah, put this over here or somewhere. Just put it in the. You can put it on the table in the back, behind you. And before we get to Daf Beis Amud Beis, we're looking on the bottom of Daf Beis Amud Aleph, and we're focused on the case of Ze Omer Kula Shali VeZe Omer Chetz Yashali.
Yeah.
And the issue that we raised, and Tosis raises it here, the Tosis Dimaskil Vizeh, is Migu. And Tosis says that Lechora, if a person says Chetz Yashali and he's holding on to the Talis, he could have equally have claimed Kula Shali. So let's believe him on Chetz Yashali with a Migu. And Tosis in the Havamina thinks that a migu should be meaningful even lahotzi, but then he quotes the Rivam, and the Rivam says no, migu lahotzi lo amrinon. Fine, migu lahotzi lo amrinon. And Tosfos says that is against a sugya in Baba Basra. This is the famous sugya called Gachin v'lochish. So the man pulls out a shtar, he's the malve. He's tover the lova. The lova denies the halva, and the balashtar, meaning the malvis, bends over to the ears of the dayan of Rava and whispers in his ear that it's true that this shtar, I admit, is a fabrication. It's a forgery, but I had another shtar. It was a perfectly good shtar, and it got lost. So in a sense, he took the law into his own hands and he replaced the real good shtar, the genuine shtar, with a false shtar. And Rava says in such a case he's believed, and we're going to force the nitba, the so-called love, to pay up the chov based on migu. Says Rava, he's a migu. Why? Because he could have said that this is a valid shtar, and nobody would have known the difference. The forgery was so excellent that even the two witnesses that are supposedly signed on, even they would be fooled by the forgery. And he did such an authentic job that he could have said nothing. And therefore we believe him to say that he had another shtar and he lost it.
What happens if the other shtar gets found?
I don't know what happens. Let's just focus on this case, but here's what happens. According to Rav Yosef, he has a migu. And since he could have tied it that this is a good shtar, we believe him, that he had another shtar, and he can collect the money. Tosfos says that's against the Rivam. The Rivam's premise is that when a person says Chetz Yashali, he's not going to be believed with a migu. And the reason for that is because that's called a migu lahotzi. And why is that? Because the moment he admits that he only has Chetzi, the first half of the talis is undisputed, and there's nothing to talk about. That belongs to, we'll call him, Reuven. Now Shimon is saying the second half of the talis is mine, but Reuven is claiming the second half of the talis as well, because he claimed Kula Shali. So on the second half of the talis, we have Shnai Mochzim, and each one is Mochzuk on half the talis. It's true that Shimon here has a Migu, but that would be a Migu Lahotzi. Says the Rivam, he's not believed with a Migu Lahotzi, and therefore we're going to split that half a talis. Each one is going to get, this one will get the third quarter of the talis, this one will get one quarter of the talis. But what are we going to do with the sugya of Rabba, which indicates that migu lahotzi amrinon, that there is a valid migu even to be motzi momen micheskos, which would bring us back to our original question in the case of chetz yashali. So Tosfos says the following: Hainu taima mishum dafilu hu shasik. Even if he would have said nothing, rak shaloya modi, would have kept his mouth shut and he wouldn't have confessed shehu mezuif, that this shtar is a forgery, hayaneman, he would be believed. Why? Since the chasim is nikeres la'omdim shom, everybody is willing to certify and authenticate the shtar, even though, again, he admits it's a shtar mezuyah, but everyone around him would have authenticated the shtar. So therefore, he's neman even lahotzi. In other words, Tosa says that there are two categories of migu. There's one category of migu where you have to put forth a claim, and you have a claim that you could have put forth, but you'd have to put forth that claim. We could believe you with a different claim because you could have put forth that claim, that the winning claim. But that's only a migu lahachzik. That's not a migu lahotzi. That migu has no power lahotzi. Then there's a different category of migu, an upgraded migu. And that's a migu where you didn't even have to put forward the other claim. And there you have a migu dibay shasik. Now the source for this migu dibay shasik is the first Mishnah, you'll tell me about Subis, but Tosis quotes the Sugyan Baba Basra. And the case is, you're right, I'm sorry, so it's in Subis. And I meant Baba Basra because it's the case of Chesk Sabatim, of Chazok on
so
Karka.
This is not in Baba Basra, this is in Subis.
No, I'm sorry, this is in Subis. I made a mistake. And the Mishnah says in Subis that if a man has a Chazokah, and we have no reason to question that chazok, and he comes forward and he says, well, this karka once belonged to Yenim's father, you know, it belonged to his father, but my father inherited it or bought it from him, or I inherited it or I bought it from him, then the Mishnah says that he's believed. Now, in karka, the main muchzok is called what? Marakama. Correct, Marakama. So this lechora should be a migu lahotzi, and the Gemara says it's not a migu lahotzi because iboy shasik. That's the Gemara at the beginning of the second parak of Ksubis. He didn't have to say a word. Why? Because he has a chazok. He's been living on the land for 3 years. We have no reason to suspect otherwise. It's not that he has to put forward a claim that my father bought the field from your father. Even if he said nothing, he would be believed. That's called an iboy shasik. So what I'm trying to figure out is why does a classic migu, which means a case where we would have to put forward the other taina, why does that give him a not an emunus, a believer? You know, he's got the credibility of a migu, but only lahasik. When it's an ibay shasik, then we have an upgraded migu, and he's neman even lahotzi mimanefshach. If the migu is a valid migu, and you've already seen the precedent in the case of migu dibay shasik, that he's believed even though he's motzi mama michas kaso, that's how reliable a migu is. Let's say it dramatically. Migu is kishnei edim dom. Then we should apply that principle even in the case of a regular migu, because even a regular migu is a migu. Haraya, he's neman lahachzik. Ella, what are you going to tell me? No. That migu could never ever be like two edim, it's a lower level migu. So why in the case of ibay shasik do you upgrade it to the level of like two edim? Again, I'm just using that to dramatize, such that he can be motzi. Is it a qualitative difference or a quantitative difference? Meaning, is it just that, you know, it's more comfortable when he could have said nothing, and if he puts his foot in his mouth, that's a real clear proof. Whereas in the case where he had to put forth a claim and he knows that that claim is not a true claim, that's not such a comfortable migu. Meaning, are we just simply measuring as if to say we have like a barometer to measure how much of a hochacha there is in his migu? Or is there some sort of fundamental difference between the two cases? Rabbi, what do you say? You understand where I'm trying to lead you. Again, I'm trying to lead you to a fundamental difference between
a different principle involved.
What is that?
Peshas or Peshahitu.
What does that basically mean, a Peshas or Peshahitu?
He could have been quiet.
Right, that I understand. But why is that a different kind of amigu? To such an extent that Tosa says it could be a migu lahotzi, and Rava says, since he didn't have to say anything about the shtar, he's believed to collect the funds, even though it's a migu lahotzi.
Because you only have his position.
Right. In the first case, he doesn't weaken his position. So again, I'm not arguing with you, Sammy. You're right. On a psychological level, I can definitely accept that there are different levels of proof over here. The fact that he put his foot into his mouth, as I said, he weakened his position, that means he must be telling the truth. You know, that's more of a proof than, well, he could have put this claim, instead he put that claim. But I'm just looking for something a little bit more fundamental, if you know what I mean. Something that you can cut with a knife.
Yeah. You have no other source of information other than him. If any of this other information that he's offering could be verified by somebody else, then this would not...
Verified or disproven, right?
Or disproven. Right, right. Even verified. It would not help him. He would not have that quality of claim, because he's not offering you something that you couldn't have already known from a different source. But if he's giving you something that you could not have known from a different source... Then
I'm not sure what you mean. Like, the classic case of Migu would be, I have two options. I could either say that I paid you back and I would be believed, or I could say I never borrowed the money from you. So again, he has two possible claims, and we're saying that Migu is good because it's lahaxic. Do I have any independent information? I'm not sure how you would verify one claim or the other. He's believed in one claim because a person, let's say, you know, pays back a chov, or a person, you know, if he denies that a chov ever took place, so then there was never what's called a cheskas chiyuv. So he denies the very cheskas chiyuv. Once he admits that there's a cheskas chiyuv, then he has to prove that he paid back. He has no proof that he paid back other than a migu. Such a migu would be a migu lahachzik, and he would be believed. But if that migu would be a migu lahotzi, we would not believe him. Let me just, only because I want to get to Beis Amid Beis, this is just a tag on to yesterday's show. I want to tell you that there are two types of migu. One type of migu is called a hochacha. The other type of migu is called koach hataina. Let me explain what I mean. In some cases, the way migu works is, we don't have clear-cut evidence. The fact that he said this and he could have said that, that gives us a certain element of evidence. Is it equal to two edim? Well, that would depend upon whether migu lahotzi amrinon or lo lahotzi amrinon. And if we say that, according to the Rivam at least, there's no migu lahotzi, it means it's an evidence, but it's not a proof on the level of two edim. And the Torah says in Dini Mamonos, al pishnayim edim yakum dov. Then there's a different kind of a migu, and that's called koach hataina. Have you ever heard such a thing?
No.
Koach hataina means that as is, if we leave things undisturbed, then the money is his. It's like the money is in the bank. That's called koach hataina. Koach hataina means that would I have said X, then X would just confirm the fact that on the winning litigant in this case, I have the upper hand. That's called koach hataina. Koach hataina means that since at this moment in time, Beis Din is convinced that the money is his, it's coming to him, you know, all evidence point in that direction. So it's like as if he's got the money in the bank. That's called a migu of koach hataina. Koach hataina means that I have a koach here in my taina that, where does it derive itself from? It's like you go to a gas pump, you know, so the gas is in the pump, and then you have a pipe that leads the gas into your car. Where does this koach of taina come from? It comes from... I'm going to stop until we... because I can't focus. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Hit the volume button. Or the power button. Hit the power button.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Thanks. It's just I get a little distracted. What I'm suggesting is that there's a certain koach, a certain power that a litigant has when all things, if they're left undisturbed, are equal. The money is in the bank. He is the winning litigant. Here's the example. A man has a shtar. The halacha is, shtarcha biyadcha my boy. Whenever a person produces a shtar that says so-and-so owes him money, then the burden of proof shifts to the person who is written in the shtar as the balchov. He's written as the person who owes the money. So if things are undisturbed, as I said before, basheru sham, right now, the koch of the shtar is such that the money is in the bank. All he needs is to get a bezdin to verify the shtar, and then bezdin will oversee and supervise the collection of the shtar. There's another case where a person has a claim, and it's a good claim, but we have to weigh the evidence. Right now, we're not convinced. Right now, we don't know who's telling the truth. You know, the Malva says, I lent you money. The Lova says, I didn't borrow any money. The Malva says, I lent you money. The Lova says, I paid you back already. We don't know who's telling the truth. And then we're going to introduce chazokas and migus and all sorts of proofs, and we'll see what we can do with those proofs. The only thing is that there's a halacha of tfisa and dini mominus, which means that I can't force anyone to pay unless he has a proof with a capital P. And then migu lahotzi lamrina means that migu is not a proof of the capital P. It's a very nice indication, but it doesn't prove anything. Now we have a different kind of migu, and that migu is a koch hataina, which means that if the money is in the bank, I use that phrase as an idiomatic phrase, I don't mean it literally, the money is not in the bank yet, because again we're talking about lahotzi, we're trying to force someone to pay up his chov, but now we have a situation in which we believe that he owes the chov. If the man has no taina whatsoever, let's say he was an elam, he was a shosek, right? He couldn't say anything. We would nevertheless collect the chov. Why? Because we have a valid shtar in the hands of the malveh, and shtar chomiyot chomai boy. In such a case, if we have a migu, that migu is migu lahotzi amrinon. Why? Because then the migu is just substantiating our original assumption that the money is coming to him. That's called an Ibai Shasik. Ibai Shasik means he has a certain power in din, because had he said nothing, we would have awarded him the money and there would be no dispute and no suffering about it. The other man's claim would fall on deaf ears. And that's the case where a person has a shtar, and as far as Bezdin is concerned, the shtar is nikar b'chasimosa for everyone. So at this point in time, even without his taina, which is called an Ibai Shasik, he would be awarded the money. In such a case, we give him that koach when he admits that this shtar is not valid to be motzi the mammon, because now the whole koach is just giving him back. It's reactivating the original koach atayin. So we're not dealing with hochachos. If we're dealing with hochachos, again, we would need a very strong hochachos like that of Edom in order to be motzi mamon v'cheskoso. A migu could only work in a case where he's already muchzak, just somebody has a claim against him, then we would apply the principle of migu. So for example, in the case of a lova, he's muchzak on the money, the malva is trying to force him to pay, and now the lova has a migu. And that migu is, he could have said, lo hayu dvar miolam, and instead he says parati. And in those cases, you know, the migu has to be lahasik. Then the migu would be valid on behalf of the lova, but not on behalf of the malva. When would we have a migu that's valid even on behalf of the malva? That's when we have a koch hataina. Koch hataina means we don't even need his taina, he's already a koch. So the taina now with the migu is only to support his original koch. Which means something very fascinating that has to be understood. I'm not ready to understand it yet, but I'm just saying at the beginning of our learning about Mitzvah, we should put this down, you know, put it on the agenda, that any time you have two Bali Dinim that come in Dini Mammon to argue about Mammon, we always have to determine who has the Koach HaTaina. Who in the present situation, even before he puts forward his argument, is considered the owner of the money. You know, that we would know up front to award him the money. Once we establish a koch hataina, then that koch hataina A could be believed even lahotzi, or B, it would mean that if somebody wanted to undermine the koch hataina, he would have to bring absolute proof, which means to aid them to undermine the koch hataina. Okay, now Rabosai, if you can give me a few minutes, only because I want to study the sugya for today. Take a look on Daf Beis Amid Beis, and here's the sugya that we want to study today. The Gemara says the following: Lema masnisin delo kibenanas. So again, there's a piece of Gemara that we'll fill in, but I think we first have to start with this sugya. Who is Benanas? The Gemara says the Ibenanas ha'amar keitzad elu v'elu boin lidei shvuashov. Benanas has a principle that we cannot impose a shvuah on two balei dinim who are contradicting one or the other. Why? Because in such a case, we know for sure that one of them is going to take a false oath. And Bezdin cannot give their support to a situation where we have to impose a shvua sheker. We'll soon see the case of Ben Anas. Rashi explains what Ben Anas is talking about. So now let's take a look at Shnayim Oksim V'Talis. Each one is claiming he owns the full talis. One of them is obviously lying. And if that be the case, if you're going to impose a mutual shvu on both of them, that's going to violate the principle of Ben Anas. Kesad Elu V'Elu Boim Lidei Shvua Shav. The Gemara answers, no. Afilu Teme Ben Anas. Hasam in Ben Anas' case. So let's just go over the case of Ben Anas, but that's called Avadei Ika Shvua Shav. What happens is you have an employer and his employee. The employer says, I paid you the wages. The employee says, I never received the wages. One of them is telling a lie. And Ben Anas says that we cannot impose a shvu in this case because by definition, one of them is going to take a shvu sheker. So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi is where the Lokim Ben Anas. Are we able to find that, Rashi? It's about two-thirds of the way down the page. The Balabais instructed the Chenvani, that's his middleman, he takes care of the, he's the manager of the corporation. Tain libni chitim bidinar v'olai l'shalim olipolim b'sela mos shani chaya b'sochram v'olai litain sela. Hu omer nasati v'hu omer lo natalti. So he says, I delivered it, I was commissioned to do so. And the other one says, I never received it. Now, shneim tovim es balabais. Why? Because the chenvani has to be reimbursed, and he claims that he paid up the money out of pocket, so now the balabais has to pay him. On the other hand, the employer claims that he never got paid, and therefore the employee has to pay. I mean, to say the other way. So shneim nishboim v'notlim mibalabais. Now normally a shvua is taken lahachzik moment. We have rare occasions which is called a shvuas nishba v'notel. A shvuas nishba v'notel, which allows you to collect money from someone's pocket based on a shvua, is taken when the original nitba would normally have to take a shvua, but he cannot take the shvua. Now again, what does that mean, he cannot take the shvua? If let's say he cannot take the shvua because there's no way he could know, then we have a shvuas nishba v'notel. In a case where he should be able to take the shvua, but for some reason we don't trust him with the shvua, that's a whole different story. Then nishba v'notel might be able to collect with that shvua, even though it's a shvuas nishba v'notel, meaning it's lahotzi mamim mechezkoso. But normally, a shvua is only lahachzik mamim, not, in other words, to support my muchzakas, but not to be motzi mamim. The exception to the rule is when you have someone who initially was obligated in money, he doesn't know whether he paid that money or not. He's not responsible for any negligence in not knowing. For example, he appointed the chenvani to pay up these wages. And in such a case, we have what's called a shvuas nishba v'notel. Now, according to the chachamim of Ben Anas, both the chenvani who wants to get reimbursed and the employee who wants to be paid his wages, they both have rights to take a shvuas nishba v'notel. And again, the balabais, through no fault of his own, he doesn't have any way of knowing whether the money was actually delivered, but on the other hand, each one has a claim and therefore they have a right to take a shvuas nishba v'notel. The only problem is, says Ben Anas, one of them is definitely going to take a shvuas sheker. We can't allow that to happen. So the Gemara thinks that in our Mishnah, if you're going to allow both of them to take a shvuah, and they're contradicting each other, they're mutually exclusive, one of them is going to take a shvuah sheker. How can the Mishnah validate such a shvuah? And for the Gemara, afilu teva ben nanas hasam vare ika shvuah shav hacha ika lemeimar deleka shvuah shav. Why? Emor de travayu bahari hadodi agbuhua. Perhaps both of them picked up the talis at the same time. And the shvu is going to be only by pachos mishvetzio. So each one is going to collect how much?
Yeah.
Half based on his shvu. And Beis Din can be very complacent about the possibility, at least, that each one is taking a shvu's emes and no one's taking a shvu's shav. And the reason for that is because it's very possible that they both picked it up. Now, if we compare this Gemara back to Tosfos on Amud Aleph, Tosfos says that what's the difference between mana shlishi, when halacha is ye munach atshiyov elyo, and shnayim oksim, when we say yachloku? The Tosfos pointed out that in the case of yachloku, what we believe is that since each one had a muchzakus, and therefore vaday, it definitely belongs to each one of them. How much belongs to each one of them? Half the talus. The Yesh Lomar, again reviewing the toast that we did yesterday, the Ochaz in Shiny, the Choshev Gilu Kol Echad Yeshba Bevada Yachetzi. And if we're going to consider that each one has Bevada Yachetzi, then each Shvua is a Shvua's MS. Again, we can't be absolutely sure about that, and that's why we want the Shvua. It could be that one guy grabbed onto the talus after the first guy grabbed on, but nevertheless, we definitely have a possibility that they both collected the talus, lifted it up at the same time. And that's in the language of Tosfos, Choshev Ke'ilu Yesh L'Kol Echad Yesh Lo Ba Chetzia. And that's based on the Chazaka on half the talus, the mutual Chazaka of each of the two. So right now the Gemara says that we can square with the Shita of Benanas. Alan, do you want to say something?
Yeah, that doesn't... It's very difficult to swallow that for a couple of reasons.
Which one? That our mission could be bananas?
Yeah.
Why? You don't agree that the chalukah could be MS?
No, but you don't even need to have that it could be MS. Even if it's definite that there's one sheker, first of all, if they carried such a rule, they'd never let Eidi HaKosh give Eidus in...
Well, not a shvua, no. We would never allow HaKosh to be subject to a shvua.
Yeah,
why? Because there's no way of accepting both. If they're mutually exclusive, then Anna says you can't impose a shvua.
The whole purpose of taking a shvua, a chakila, what does a shvua do? What is the ufta for?
A shvua tries to prove that what he's saying is true. So we're hoping that he'll finally admit the truth.
How does he prove? Because he would be afraid to take a shvua.
Correct, he would be afraid to take a false shvua.
But you're taking away the thing that if one is telling a lie, you're not letting him take a shvua. Because he might tell a lie, but that's the whole purpose of...
No, if he might tell a lie, again, the Gemara's not saying we know for sure that each one is telling the truth. Obviously, then Shvua would be meaningless. But we can't impose a Shvua in such a way that we know the Shvua is going to be a Shvua Sheker, meaning...
If he takes it, but they'd be...
No, we're talking about a situation in which Beis Din are demanding that each one take a Shvua.
Correct.
If Beis Din are demanding that two people take a Shvua and there's no way of reconciling their claims, it's not even feasible, then we, according to Benanas, we can't impose. But if it's one person who's taking shvua, let's say for example Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me 100, and now Shimon says, no, I only owe you 50, so the shvua hopefully will get Shimon to the point in which he'll admit that he owes him 100. Not only,
you know, why wouldn't that, we also, why would they say that they claim the same claim?
Right, but only one person is taking the shvua. So again, Benanis' problem is a very unique problem. It only applies in two cases. Case number one is the Chenvoni Alpin Koso, and the case number two is Shnayim Oksim Vitalis. These are the only two cases that we know of where we impose the Shvua to two different Bali Dinim. And the Gemara says, well, how do I reconcile these two? In one case, Benanas says, Ben Chenvoni, there is no Shvua. In the other case, we have the Mishnah that says, again, you could always say that Mishnah is against Benanas, but the Gemara is trying to reconcile that Mishnah with Benanas. So the Gemara answers, Benanas only went as far as to do away with the Shvua when we know up front that one of the two Nishbaim is going to take a Shvua Shav. That we can't get involved.
That's exactly how you flush out the line.
That's right.
When he has to be alive.
But again,
but
we're not talking about. Right, exactly.
The court's not responsible. He's responsible.
No. Because Beis Din is being Machayev the Shvua. It's a case where Beis Din is. That doesn't matter, but Beis Din can't enact the Shvua according to Benanas when they know that as a result someone, if he decides to take the Shvua, is definitely going to take a Shvua Sheker.
They won't even set it up that way.
What do you say?
They won't even set it up that way.
Correct, we're talking about setting up the Shvua.
Right.
We don't have the authority to set up a shvuah in such a way that in the shvuah we know that someone's going to take a shvuah sheker. Again, we always hope that no one's going to take a shvuah sheker. In every case of a shvuah, if you have Eid Echad, if you have shvuah sashomrin, if you have shvuah smodu b'miksas, in all cases of shvuah, we're hoping that he'll be nirtaz, the Israelis call it. Meaning he'll be so overwhelmed by the fear of taking a shvuah sheker that he'll admit the truth. That's for sure. We always take a risk that he might take a shvuah sheker. Again, the Torah believes that he won't take a shvuah sheker. We have a certain naive ability. But when two people have to take the shvuah, you're imposing both shvuah. Again, that's not the sheep of the Chachamim. The Chachamim say that both the Chenvani and the employee will both take the shvuah, the poel and the employee. Why? Because each one is a separate shvuah. Bezin is imposing one shvuah on him, and then he'll be online and he'll impose the shvuah on him. In each case, they're hoping that he'll be near Ta. He'll be overwhelmed by the fear.
Right.
But they not as the sheet is that we're imposing both shvuahs as one entity, and that we can't do. All right, let's go on to the next case of Sumchas. This is the case that I wanted to deal with today. Lema Masnisin Delokis Sumchas. This is really a beautiful piece of Gemara. Sumchus, as you recall from yesterday's discussion, represents the shita that says, forget about muchzakus. But rather, we should say yachloku. Now, the chaluka of sumchus has nothing to do with shvua. What's it based on? It's based on dror de mamona. If we believe that this mamon belongs to the, you know, if we have an equal claim to this money of two different people, machlif parah b'chamor, then Sumchus says, Yachloku, b'li shvua. We don't need a shvua. In other words, what the Rabbanon here in our Mishnah trying to do is that they're not relying on Yachloku. They would really want to find out if maybe one of them actually picked up the talis by himself and he's the sole owner of the talis. But they impose a shvua because we really aren't comfortable with Yachloku. That's not the case for Sumchus. Sumchus' principle is that Maman Amuto B'Safik Cholkim, and that's a Chalukah that is the chosen psak for what? For Maman Amuto B'Safik. We don't need to go beyond that. Yachloku is the Lechatchila. Now the Mishnah comes along and says, Nen, Yachloku is not Lechatchila. Yachloku is only a fallback position, but what are we going to do in order to try to clarify? We don't have any evidence. No witnesses can claim that they saw which one picked it up first. What we're going to do is we're going to impose a shvua. You have no right to have the talis, unless you take the shvua. If you refuse to take the shvua, then the whole talis is going to go to Reuven, and he'll take the shvua. So that the precondition for Yachloku in our Mishnah is the Shvuah. No one has rights to have the talis until he takes the Shvuah. That's not Sumchus. Let's read it inside. Lema Masnisin Delokis Sumchus. Deikis Sumchus. Ha'amar, he claims that Maman Amutu B'Safik Cholkim below Shvuah. In other words, Sumchus sees in Yachloku, this is the directive of the halacha for Maman Amuto B'Safik. We have 1,000 cases of Maman Amuto B'Safik, says Sumchus. We're going to apply the principle of Yachloku, and that's exactly what we want to do. We want to make sure that each one of the Balidin who has a claim should get his due to the claim, and the best we can do is to split the Maman and each one takes half. We don't need a Shmur, because that is exactly the psak of Bezdin for Maman Amuto B'Safik. So the Gemara says, I'm not even, just let me finish the Gemara. So the Gemara says, V'yela mai Rabbanon. Rabbanon are the ones who say that Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya. So Ha'amri Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya. In other words, I don't understand. You can justify the Shvuah according to the Chachamim? Wait a minute. I'm on board with you on Sumchus. Sumchus does not have a shvuah here. He cannot recognize the shvuah. His halach is yachloku. The Rabbanan don't have yachloku. The Rabbanan have hamotzi mechavel of araya. Okay, hamotzi mechavel of araya. But where's the shvuah? I still don't justify the shvuah. We have three shvuahs that we could justify. This is not one of them. So the Gemara now comes up with a chiddush to justify the shvuah according to the Chacham. Hi, my. I am Rishlei Merabbanon. Hasam. In that machlokes, back in the case of either Shar, either Machlok Par B'Chamor or Shoshanog Tzapar. Those are the two classic cases of the Machlok Shin, Rabbanan and Sumchus. There, the Rabbanan say, Hamotzi Mechavero Olav Araya. Let's see who's holding on to the Shar, or who's holding on to the Vlad. And that's called Lotafsi Travayu. Yeah. One of them is holding on to it, the other is not. So then the Rabbanan reject Yachloku. And who's going
to... Nobody's holding on to it.
What do you mean no one's holding on to it? The Gemara says, let's say Vlada
this. Okay, the Divine Kaima.
Correct, the Divine Kaima. Which means that we're not holding like Sumchus, right? We're holding that it depends where the Vlad is. And wherever the Vlad is, that's the person who's going to get awarded the Vlad. Why? Because Hamotzim Chavel of a Raya, and there's no Raya against it.
Okay.
And the same thing is going to apply in the case of Shoshanoga Sapporo. We don't know if he killed the Vlad or he didn't kill the Vlad. So the Baal HaShar is Muxok. I'm sorry. In the case of the Baal HaShar is the Baal HaMazik, so he's Muxok. And we're going to apply the principle of Motzi Mechavel Arai. So the Rabbanim reject. They reject what? Yachloku. Oh, but what about here in our case? Here we have a case, Omer Rabbanim Motzi Mechavel Arai, but here, Hocha de Travayu Tafsi. Each one has a tfisa. If each one has a tfisa on the talis, then we're going to have to apply Motzi Mechavel Arai in both directions. In other words, if you award the talis to Shimon, so then you have violated the Motzi Mechavel Arai against Reuven, or vice versa. So what do we need here? We need some sort of clarification, because how are we going to apply the principle of Motzi Mechavel Arai? If we take the talis out of this one's hands, then we're undermining his chazaka, and vice versa. So the Gemara says, "Is palgi le b'shvua." The Gemara thinks that in this case, where both of them have a tfisa, we're not going to apply the principle of Hamotzi Mechavel Arai, because each tfisa, in a sense, neutralizes the other. We don't know how to take it out of anyone's hands. So what are we going to do? We're going to flip a coin. Okay, but if you can do better than that, I'd rather not flip a coin. So how do we do better than that? Is there any way that we can do some sort of proof on behalf of each one of these two claimants? The answer is a shvua. But sumchus, ela iamrit sumchus, hashta. Now let's take a look at sumchus' case of a machluf par b'chamor or shoshanok esampon. Mahosam de lo tafsi travayu. Sumchus goes as far as to say that even in a case where the Vlad is omedes ba'agam, which means that no one has any tfis on it at all, is chokim below shvua. The low tafsi travayu and chokim. So in the absence of a tfisa, we should require some sort of a shvua to figure out who really owns the Vlad. But no, Sumcha says chokim, and we don't need a shvua, because Sumcha says I advocate in favor of Mamon Amuto B'Safek chokim. Is Hachav the Travayu Tafsi way, where each one has at least a Tfisa which supports his claim, is Lokoshki. So if you have no Tfisa to support your claim, and still Sumchus insists on what? Yachloku, and we don't require any Shmua. How much more so if each claimant has some sort of a proof to support his claim, he has at least a Tfisa, is how much more so we don't need a Shmua? Says the Gemara, name. Afilu Tema, even if you'll say our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Sumchus, I can reconcile our Mishnah with Sumchus. Why? Ki Omri, when does Sumchus say that we should do away with the Shmua? That's only in a case of Shema Veshema. That's only in a case where no one knows anything. The Mocher doesn't know when the Parah was this, and the Kone and the Lokeach doesn't know when the Parah gave birth. So in that case of Shema V'Shema, that's where Sumchus says we cannot impose a Shvua. Why? Because no one can take a Shvua. I will bury you, bury, when there is a possibility of a meaningful Shvua, where each one has a Tainus Vadai, like the case of Metzias at Talus, each one's claiming he picked up the Talus first. Lo Amar, there Sumchus didn't say Yachloku Belo Shvua. And therefore, Sumchus can accept a Shvua in a case of Bari Ubari. So it means that Tzumchus advocates in favor of Yachloku, even if there's no Tfisa, but nevertheless, he would certainly agree that if we could impose a Shvuah, and that would give us a basis for the Psak of Yachloku, that's what we ought to do. But that's only if you assume that Tzumchus applies to Bari Ubari. He doesn't apply to... I'm sorry. That Tzumchus applies to Shema V'Shema. And he never said it with regard to Bari Ubari. That's a possibility. But L'Rabba Barav Huna Di Omar Tzumchus Afilu Bari Ubari. According to Rabba, Tzumchus went as far as to say Bavan Abutu B'Safek Cholkin Below Shvuah, even in a case of Bari Bari where there is a feasibility to take a Shvuah, to impose a Shvuah, because each one is claiming Vadai, each one is saying, I was there when the Parah gave birth to the Vlad, and I know it was after the Kinyan, or it was before the Kinyan, or for example, when the Mazik says, I know for sure that the Parah gave birth before the Negicha, and therefore it's not my problem, my Shah didn't kill your Vlad, it died of a natural death. The Nizak on the other hand says, I know for sure that this later took place after the Negicha, and it was a result of the Negicha. You've got to pay me damages on the Vlad. And even in this case, according to Rabbah at least, Tzumchus says Yachloku below Shvuah, even though here in this case each one is coming forward with a definite claim, he's certain about it, he can certainly take a Shvuah, there's no problem with that. Tzumchus says no, Yachlok, we have a din of Yachlok, and you see over and over again that the Gemara is emphasizing and chipping away at all possibilities that Tzumchus is based on what? On Yachloku. And Yachloku is the way that we have to go. We really have reason to believe that it might belong to him, it might belong to him, and even if each one of them is making a claim, we're going to say Yachloku.
Belishvua.
And without a Shvuah, and for the Gemara, Filu Tema Tzumchus. Wow, the Gemara is not willing to let go. Ki Amar, when does Tzumchus say that we can do away with the Shvuah and just say Yachloku? Heicha de'ika drara de'mamona. And this is what we discussed at great length yesterday, that the key fundamental underlying premise of Tzumchus is the power and the authority of drara de'mamona. What's drara de mamona? So if you take a look at Tosfos says drara de mamona pirush shebelo tanaseim yesh safek lebezd. In other words, machlif par b'chamar, the safek arises on its own. It's what do we call it in biology? Spontaneous combustion, yeah. Right? What happens simultaneously? Excellent generation. So now what happens is that the Shar was nogeach the par, and now we find a Vlad. Well, we have to ask ourselves, when did the Vlad suffer this death blow? Well, maybe it didn't suffer a death blow, maybe it died even before the Negicha. Well, machlif par b'chamar, we don't know if the baby was born before the Khalif and the Kinyan Khalif or after the Kinyan Khalif. That's called Hasafek Nolad Mi Atzmo. Right? It's a self-generated Safek. In such a case, Tzumchus says we have a Din of Yachloku. There are rights to each one of the claimants, and we don't know which one is the one who should get it. Tzumchus advocates in favor of Yachloku. However, in a case where we don't have an objective suffix, the suffix is a result of their tainus law. Here Tzumchus agrees that Yachloku is a fallback position. It's really a position that we have to take the less braver if we have no way of clarifying the suffix. But it's not really our first choice. We really have to, if we could, we really try to clarify the suffix and see who's putting forward a true, authentic claim. So the Gemara now is of the opinion, and the Gemara is going to reject this in a minute, that when a person puts forth a claim and he has no shaykhus, no relationship to this moment, unless he puts forward a claim, that's called below Tani Yaseim Yesh Safek LeBezdin, then his position vis-a-vis this moment is a very weak position. And Yachloku is going to be a fallback. It's not something that we're excited about. we're going to try and not leave anything, any leaf unturned, in order to try to be mavar the suffix. And the bira suffix is going to come through shvuah. And even sumchus would agree that there's a requirement of yachloku b'shvuah. When does sumchus argue against the rabbanon in the case of machlu par b'chamor or shor shadonkas par? There is a drar de mamona. We don't have to rely on his claim. Even before he came and made the claim, Bezdin was already in a situation of Maman Amuto Besafe. In such a case, Sumcha says that's the genuine, real McCoy Maman Amuto Besafe. It's a suffix to Bezdin. Not a suffix that's a result of claims and counterclaims. It's an objective suffix. In such a case, Sumcha says, what did the Torah expect us to do in an objective suffix? It's like Suffik d'oraisa l'chumra, suffik d'rabbanon l'kula, svek svek l'kula. We have rules. So in Dini Mamonis there's a rule. Suffik yachlok. And that's the rule of thumb. That's the psak that's appropriate for a suffik. Unless it's not really a suffik. Unless the suffik is a result of what? Tainus. If it's a result of tainus, there's no objective suffik. Then each tine has to be weighed, it has to be investigated, it has to be questioned. You know, we have to take the opinion of, you know, you're not telling me the truth until you can prove that you're telling me the truth. And here's where Sumchus would agree that we impose a shvuah. And why does the Gemara backtrack? The lav kal v'chomer, isn't it just the reverse? The logic is just the reverse. Hasam de'ika drar de mamona. Now let's look at drar de mamona. We've been analyzing drar de mamona from the perspective of Bezdin has a bird's eye view, right? They see two people that are arguing and disputing over mamon. You know what? Each one has a good claim to it. There's an objective suffix. Let's now paskin yachloku, and that's it. Shalom al Yisrael. That's called drar de mamon. Now the Gemara takes the opposite approach. Let's not look at the bird's eye perspective of Bezdin. Let's look at each claimant here. And each claimant has a very, very strong claim because it's a drar de mamona. His claim, his taina, is only coming to support his drar de mamona. So therefore, Hasam, in the case of Shoshanaga Sapara, I'll tell you why Sumchus does away with the shvuah. That's only because Ika drar de mamona lamar, Ika drar de mamona mar. If you want to take out his mamon and remove his mukzakus, he's going to yell and scream, but I have a drar de mamona. Bezin, you already anticipated my claim, and you gave credence to my status here vis-a-vis this moment, even before I opened up my mouth. So why should you tell me that I have to substantiate my claim with a shvuah? That's the case of drar de mamona. And that's the case where Sumcha says that, you know what? The other baldin is going to be able to remove you because he took a shvuah. And let's say you aren't willing to take a shvuah. However, Ika lememar dekula demar v'ika lememar dekula mar. And Sumchus says that even though it could be, and it should be, that one of the two, either the mazik or the nizak, or the mocher lokech, has rights to the entire mamon, Ikal ameimer kula demar, ikal ameimer kula mar. Nevertheless, Omar Sumchus, Maman amutol besafek cholkim below shvua. Each one has a claim that if it would be substantiated, he would be able to collect the entire sum of money if he'd only bring a raya. So why not give a chance, give an opportunity to bring a raya? Let him take a shvua, and maybe the other one won't take a shvua. Nevertheless, comes along Sumchus and he says, even though it might all be yours, Reuven, or it might be all yours, Shimon, we're going to split it without a shvuah. We're not going to require a shvuah. Again, we're talking about bari yubari, according to Rabba. Is hacha the lekel of the drar demona? Who has a solid claim over here? Nobody has a solid claim. There's no objective suffix. We don't know who owns the talis. Maybe a third party owns the talis. Is ikel of the travayu, and it could very well be that both of them have a valid claim. Is lo kolshkein, how much more so in this case where we don't really have to take it out of anyone's claim? Certainly, yachloku, without a shvu, would be the appropriate psak. And the Gemara answers, afilu tema sumchus, you misunderstood the whole shvuah. This shvu is a separate hakodes chachamim. Shvu azu mi rabbanan hi kid Rabbi Yochanan. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan shvu azu takodes chachamim. It only applies to metziah, a lost talis, a lost object. It's very good. If you're allowing me to grab onto something and claim it's mine, I'm going to go ahead and grab your talus and claim it's mine. So, and I'll get half. So that we have to make this takana. So again, just to summarize, the Gemara in the Havmina thought that the Shvua was a bona fide Shvua Doraisa that would be generated by the Psak Din, and the Psak Din would require a Shvua. The Gemara says, going to Sumchus, there is no requirement to Shvua. We'd say Yachloku without a Shvua. But now the Gemara is changing its mind based on the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. This Shvua is a Takonis Chachamim. It's a separate enactment in order to fix up society. Okay then? All right, we'll stop here.